Hour number two of Darren and Donick on this Friday morning. Bottom of the hour, we'll get a Saints preview. We're going to talk a little Preds right here as they fall 5-1 last night to the Jets. Speaking of that, Frugal McDougal, that's your place tomorrow, 701 Division Street in Nashville, from 3 until 5 p.m. Going to hang out there, then go to the Preds and Florida Panthers? You should do that. Another chance for you to win a pair of tickets on the Yeehaw Brewing Company Predators bus trip that we gave away on this show and sold out in hours. You can see the Preds take on the Blues in St. Louis on Saturday, February 9th. You must be 21 years of age to enter. So be over at Frugal McDougal tomorrow between 3 and 5 p.m., 701 Division Street, for your chance to be a part of that. You'll have another chance to win on Monday from 10 in the morning until 1 in the afternoon. Now, 1 o'clock will be pregame for Preds and Avalanche. But if you go to Corner Pub in Brentwood, go have lunch there, which is at 710 Old Hickory Boulevard. You cannot miss it, right there on the strip. Very nice place right there, very visible. And again on Wednesday at Corner Pub. So more chances to win. We're giving you more opportunities. You've asked to be a part of this trip because it's sold out so quickly. There you go. It starts tomorrow at Frugal McDougal from 3 until 5 p.m. Okay, we talked about it a little bit in the first segment. I think there was a little bit of a panic after last night, and you could say rightfully so. But I thought for the most part it wasn't over the top. I thought it would be a little bit crazier from the fan base of, oh my gosh, now you have to make a move. Now that was certainly out there. But we're going to ask you, has your mind changed? Did anything change for you after last night's result? Or is it still the same you felt before the game? We'd like to know. I'd be curious to see where people are today, because I think the feeling after Tuesday night's game was, okay, all right, feeling pretty good. This team can do it. Get Yannick Weber back after 10 games. Kyle Turris is, you know, maybe close to getting back. You're about to have your whole roster back. Okay. And then last night, maybe you jumped over to the other side. Said, uh-oh. If it is truly going to be a collision course, which we all believe it's going to be, do they have the weapons? Can they, in a seven-game series, find a way to get four?
That's the uniqueness of the loss last night. It's against the team that you're probably going to have to go through to win a Stanley Cup. So I am curious, just to throw out there, how do you feel about it today as opposed to 24 hours ago or maybe after the game last night when you might have been in a fit of rage and ready to do just about anything? If you're a passionate fan. And that's what I think is one of the best attributes of David Poile. He's not going to overreact to, say, a 7-2 win over the Capitals, and he's not going to panic when you have a loss like that. But he is going to measure both for what they're worth. And I think going forward, as I said at the top of the show today, Darren, I think both perspectives are important. As Peter Laviolette said last night, the Jets did what they do well against us last night, and they won the game going away. The Predators did not do what they do well, and consequently ended up being a lopsided game. And it's going to be mystifying, I'm sure, to everybody why you don't have your best in a big game like that, but it does happen sometimes. But the bigger question is, these are the questions that were asked to Peter Laviolette last night. How do you feel about Kevin Fiala right now? What about the Jets' size?
Let's hear his answer on that. He was asked specifically about the Jets' size.
These are fair questions.
Let's hear how the head coach answered that.
Does their size make a difference against you guys more than other teams that you see?
You've got to be able to handle it. I mean, they're a fast team and they're big. So, like I said, it's not like we've never beaten the Jets. They've always been this way. Tonight they had their game. They were better. But there's no, you know, what you're seeing is, I guess, the obvious, right? They're a big team.
Without Bufflin. Their biggest, biggest guy.
Yeah. And, by the way, without one of their dynamic speedsters. Nick Ehlers. Yeah. Who is a guy that is an upgrade over what they have
right now.
Although
Lemieux looked pretty fast on that wraparound.
Well, I mean, that was the other thing that made it lopsided is the fourth liners got three goals. I mean, you don't go in there thinking that that's going to happen. In fact, how many people knew who those guys were going into the game last night?
I said the key, one of the keys of the game is shutting down Mason Appleton. And then I said, who is that? It sounds like a drink.
Well, what's funny is he was born in Wisconsin. Green Bay, Wisconsin, not really? Appleton, Wisconsin. How funny is that? But you know what he said, though? He said, this is the thing, this is the dilemma if you're David Poile. They didn't handle the size last night for the Jets. And when you lose to the Jets, a lot of times that is what jumps out. Man, they can overwhelm you with their combination of size and skill. The Predators are not a big team. They have some big players. They have some tough players. But generally speaking, they're not as big and strong. Very few teams are as big and strong as Winnipeg. But I also heard Peter Laviolette say this, and he's absolutely right. It's not like we haven't beaten the Jets. They have split the last 14 meetings, 7-7. They're evenly matched teams. Even if neither one changes, it's not like the Predators can't beat the Jets. They know they can beat the Jets. But I do wonder if the Jets now have a feeling of, okay, we won game 7 here. That was a big statement win. Certainly their confidence right now going up against the Predators is a checkbox for the Jets. They're going to come in believing, hey, we have what it takes to beat the Predators. The Predators are tough. They're a great team, but we can beat them. The Predators, I think, still believe that, but that was a tough blow last night.
You want to hear another important stat in this series between these two teams? It's vitally important to get that first goal. 8 out of the last 9 times, the first goal is the winner of the game. You know the only time it didn't happen in the last 9 games? You know it.
Yep.
Game three when they're up 3-0.
Yeah.
3-0. That's the only time the first goal hasn't worked. The last 9 times these two teams have gotten together. First goal is your winner. That's another thing to keep in mind. We'll track that in the 2 games in March. We'll see if that plays out as well when they both are played up in Winnipeg. Bicycle Boy in Spring Hill, what's up?
Hey, fellas, you just kind of covered what I was calling about. I went early last night and just because I wanted to take a look at the Jets. And, man, it was like looking at during warm-ups. It was like looking at redwoods skating around on one end and a bunch of saplings on the other end. But I think they've got, I don't know if this is right or not, I think there was only 2 players on their team that are under 6 foot. So, and you know, the move in the league has been, you know, to faster, more skilled players, but they've somehow figured out how to get faster, more skilled, and big, giant players. So I don't know if Poile can find a big guy to trade for, but here's something that came
up. I'm trying to read you. Are you saying you've changed your mind since last night, or you still feel the same?
You know, I may be changing my mind. I'm kind of still on the fence. But here's something that came up in our section last night. What's Pekka's record against the Jets? Has UC played against the Jets much?
UC's played a little bit against the Jets, but what's interesting is take a look at Pekka's numbers in the regular season against the Jets. Going into last night, 16-4-1.
His career record, spectacular.
16-4-1.
Although, as UC played, he played game 7 almost the whole game. Remember?
Yeah. So Pekka was feast or famine in the series last year.
He got pulled 3 times in that series? Twice?
I don't think 3. Maybe twice? I think it was twice. But he was great in the 3 games that they won.
Well,
great.
And don't forget Pekka shut him out earlier this year. Here.
Shut him out.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it's hard to figure it out. Just kind of curious on where you know, I was trying to figure out if you've changed or you're just trying to maybe still feel your way on what is this team. That's what I'm getting. That's the vibe I'm getting.
Well, I have been posing this to, and I would love for you to share some of what Hal said after the game, because Hal and Mace and a lot of other people, the challenge that you have to have when you are not as big as the Jets is you've got to get your share of greasy goals, tough goals in front of the net. Now, Arvidsson got there last night for the 1 goal that they scored. Right? Arvidsson, even though he's not a big guy, finds his way. He's able to get in there. You don't necessarily have to be a big guy to disrupt things in front of the net. But that's ultimately, in a 7-game series, you got to get your share in there. Last night, they got the 1, but Winnipeg won the battle of blocking shots, getting better looks. They got better looks than the Predators. Their top guns didn't end up scoring the goals. It was the guys at the bottom, which was the weird thing about it. But if you look at the scoring chances for both teams, the Jets outplayed the Predators in that area. And they deserve to win the game. So you have to ask yourself, can you beat them in a seven-game series on a better night? I think you definitely beat them a few times, but what could tip the scales in your favor? Could another guy who could help disrupt and neutralize that size advantage they have, could that help you? And what's the price of that person? And what are the options? We've discussed some of those well before this game, right? Guys that are bigger guys that might be out there at different price tags.
We'll come back and hear on the other side what Peter Laviolette said about Kevin Fiala when he was asked about that. Also what Ryan Johansson told us in postgame, his takeaway from the game too. We'll do that and Hal Gill's comments as well. More on the other side of Darren and Donick, 102.5 The Game.
You know, I think that Kevin's trying. You know, to be honest, we were quiet in a lot of areas, I thought, as a group tonight. I thought the Johansson line put a lot of pucks at the net, scored the goal for us, but they're clicking. We're looking for, I think, secondary scoring under that, and Kevin probably falls into that with other guys. We could use more production from underneath.
Peter Laviolette asked about the play of Kevin Fiala, and that was his answer on that. Of course, a lot of fans were obviously talking about the second goal.
Right. There was, you know, sometimes
the second goal that counted.
Right.
Sometimes there was a power play goal taken off the board.
This is just hockey, right? And it happened. I have been the guy in basketball games where you make the glaring error in front of everybody, and even the non-experts know, whoops, that's the guy that screwed up. I know who screwed up on that play. It's that guy. And so, obviously, Kevin had one of those moments last night, which nobody wishes on anybody. He turned it over. Pekka bailed him out on the first one, but it sent the whole play into a scramble. They never did get covered. And Appleton, who, honestly, I didn't know anything about until I was researching the game. I'm looking up. Like, who? But you always ask yourself as the announcer, if this guy does something, do I have something to say about him? And so you write one or two little notes, and fortunately I did.
Willie, that's exactly what I did. This is how because I had the same reaction that in Carolina in the second goal. Saku Mäntylainen, and I'm like, who?
Yeah.
And that's how I found out. I looked, I was like, who the hell is that guy? I look him up, I'm like, fifth round pick? The Predators six years ago? What? From Finland? That's how I learned about Mäntylainen. And then last night it was like, Appleton? Who?
Right.
Mason Appleton?
Made a big play.
Who?
But back to Fiala. That mistake aside, Kevin Fiala is going to make some mistakes. But he is hopefully going to make it up for it by being a dynamic scorer. He's got dynamic scoring ability. So what do you have in him right now? His contract's up at the end of the season. He's still very, very young. I don't think he is fully developed as a player yet. I still think he's got more levels that he can hit. Right now, he's got 11 points in his last 11 games. He has been contributing right now in the scoring column. But Peter Laviolette, I think, hit on a broader issue. Secondary scoring against the Jets. That's a big theme of, if you match up against the Jets in a playoff series, what line did they neutralize last year? Now, Kevin Fiala had the double overtime game winner. Mm-hmm. But by and large, the second line was neutralized, Turris, Smith, and Fiala. So I think that's something that they have to get a fair evaluation. And last night, the Jofa line did get their chances. Arvidsson scored. They got some looks. You know what the Bonino line is set out there to do. They're a checking line. I think they're a really good line that you can win big with. They were great in the playoffs last year. They were great against the Jets last year. There's no issue with that one. I think the second line is where they have to look and say, you know, you didn't have Turris last night. And so it was Yarncroak, Smith, and Fiala. And that line didn't bring a whole lot to the table last night. They weren't pushing the play a lot offensively. And so, again, it's one game. And recently, they've had pretty good production, pretty darn good production. But what does it look like in a playoff series against the Jets, especially with Turris back?
Let's go to Brentwood. Rick, you're up next. What do you think?
Well, I'm also feeling a little ambivalent as to how even I thought they were. I think the Jets are now just slightly ahead, but I think that can be corrected. The two things I noticed, or at least it became obvious the more I watched the game, was with the exception of Arvidsson and Craig Smith a little bit, Nashville doesn't have the big presence at the front of the net who's always blocking and tipping shots like a Jason Arnott or a Patrick Hornquist. Arvidsson does it some, or does it quite a bit, but he's about the only one other than Smith that will get down and pay the price in front of the goalie.
Benino gets some tips.
Benino's pretty good at it. I would say Sissons is pretty good at it, but I agree with you. There's nobody. You mentioned Hornquist. Hornquist is the guy that would come to mind
would
for Predator
fans.
Would
pay the ultimate price in front.
Yeah, he's one of the best in the league.
Yes. Honestly, Scott Hartnell did that too.
Hartnell for years, yes. Very good at
Hartnell
it.
Hartnell did it. Hartnell also did
Mike it. Fisher, pretty good at
thing,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I noticed that the Jets were doing better than Nashville last night was their defensemen seemed to be looking around. As Crispy always says, they have their heads on a swivel. So anytime we got anywhere near the goal, they were pushing bodies out of the way so that Hellebuck could see the puck.
Right. And
he
that's
didn't
without
have anybody taking away his eyes.
And that was without their best guy at doing that in Dustin Byfuglien.
Byfuglien wasn't even playing. So two of the goals for sure, the Jets were able to just skate in within about 6-8 feet of the net and score goals. So I would say the defense core kind of dropped the ball last night, which was disappointing.
Anything else, Rick?
That's it.
All right, thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Ryan Johansson, we had him in postgame last night in Barrel House, and here was his takeaway about last night's performance.
Yeah, I don't think it's as much about them as it will be about us and what we need to improve on. We know we can beat those guys. We dominated the first matchup we had against them earlier in the season, and moving forward with the last chunk of games we got here, it's about us and getting to our game to where we want it at.
It's more about them, as in us, than worrying about what Winnipeg does. You know what's interesting is when you think about, we've talked about how it's been back and forth and it's even, but there have been some lopsided games in this series as well, too, right? You think about they're not always one goal. Remember how, like, the stat for a good while was like, how does Los Angeles and Nashville, every time they get together, it's always a one-goal game? Like, you can just count on it. The Keens and the Preds. Why? But there have been lopsided games in this series. It's not like it's 5-4, 4-3. Now, there have been some crazy one-goal, there's also been some games that got away from both teams.
There
Predators
have
dominated some games. Winnipeg has dominated some games.
There have been. So it's exerting your will. It's doing what you do well, playing your game. And I'm sure that's where Ryan Johansson's mentality is. If we play our game, we know we can beat the Jets. That's what I'm hearing him say, and I think he's dead on right. So his approach is the right approach, but that's not the same approach. That's not the same thinking of David Poile, who before these two teams meet again twice in Winnipeg in March, the trade deadline will have come and gone, right? So whatever you do between now and then, you've got to decide before February 25th.
We'll come back. We'll get a little perspective on the Saints. We'll head down to New Orleans. We do that on the other side. I want to talk to all the men out there. I've been telling you about my friends over at Cool Springs MD, about how they have started to help men who need help with hormone deficiencies and imbalances, and that happens as we get older. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, who is the board-certified physician, and his wife Daphne Lodge, the registered nurse, along with their very experienced staff, they want to give you men out there the treatments that are required to improve your quality of life. Who doesn't want that? Especially as we get older as adults. They've helped many men here in the Middle Tennessee area with improving your immune systems, especially this time of year, energy levels, cognitive function, and so much more. They're there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. You want to make an appointment? What are you waiting for? Do it right now. Call this number, 615-660-6900. That's 660-6900. Or you can always visit their website, coolspringsmd.com. Pick six coming up in the final hour. We'll make you pick who's going to win these games on Sunday. Rams and Saints down in New Orleans get all the action started at 2 o'clock Central. John Katzenstein covers the Saints for Josh. What did I just say? Did I say John? Josh, sorry. Josh told me that I should say Josh. Good job by you. He covers the Saints for the Times-Picayune, NOLA.com. Josh, how you doing?
Joe, how are you?
Doing fantastic. We were batting this around. The Saints haven't given up a 100-yard rusher all season, and yet here come the Rams, who just ran for 275 on Dallas and had two 100-yard rushers. What gives in that department in this game, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, I have to think that, you know, the Saints are still confident in their rushing defense. I mean, you have to go all the way back, I believe, week 11 of 2017 was the last time that they gave one up, and it was Samaje Perine on the Redskins. And, you know, in week 9 when these two teams faced each other, I think, you know, they held Todd Gurley to about 60 yards rushing and the Rams to like 83 total. So certainly they're going in with confidence. It definitely hurts the Saints that they don't have Sheldon Rankins, who's their top interior defensive lineman. But certainly I think everyone here would be shocked if, you know, the Rams were able to do what they did against the Cowboys last week.
What changed for Sean Payton? I mean, we already knew how good they were on offense, and Drew Brees would put up the stats every year. But obviously, you know, they had that lull. They couldn't get in. Their defense wasn't good enough. The year they won the Super Bowl, it wasn't overwhelming, their defense, but they were very opportunistic. What changed where the Saints have a real formidable defense and they started getting it done on that side of the ball?
Well, I think a big part of it is having Dennis Allen as the defensive coordinator. He took over for Rob Ryan in the middle of that just awful 2015 season. And, you know, in 2016, the defense was still bad. But then the past 2 years, it's been significantly better. And I think the other key, and this just doesn't apply to the defense, but the whole team, was that 2017 draft class. I mean, you look at that. They got Marshon Lattimore, the cornerback, who's already one of the best corners in the NFL. They got Alvin Kamara, Ryan Ramczyk, the right tackle, who's started every game the past 2 years, Marcus Williams, their free safety, and Alex Anzalone, who's, you know, one of their you know, top three linebackers. He doesn't play every snap, but he's out there a lot and makes big plays. So I think, you know, you have to give a lot of credit to Jeff Ireland, who's their assistant GM and college scouting director, for, you know, finding that draft class, which was probably the first or second best draft class in team history. And the other one was 2006 when, you know, they had just gotten Sean Payton and Drew Brees. And then they got, you know, Reggie Bush, Marcus Colston, Zach Strief, all those guys. You know, that draft class helped them go to the NFC Championship game in 2006 and ultimately win the Super Bowl in 2009. I think we're seeing, you know, a similar turnaround this year because of last year's draft class.
Josh, we knew Alvin Kamara was going to be a stud. We knew it from the get-go that he was going to tear up this league. Kidding, we did not. We would have no way of knowing that with his days at UT because he barely got the ball. How do you explain what he's been able to do his first 2 years in the NFL?
Well, I mean, I think Butch Jones is just an idiot, right? I mean, I think that's
well, we've said something like that. I don't know if we've called him those words, but something like that. Yeah,
some people have.
Yeah, some people have.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. I mean, he had more touches, you know, his rookie year with the Saints than he did any season, any of his two seasons at UT. And I think, you know, that's just a mind-blowing stat, you know, because so many running backs get run into the ground when they're in college. But, I mean, I think, you know, the Vols just didn't know what they had with him. It seemed like they thought that he was just this scat back, but clearly he's proven the last 2 years that he can run between the tackles and do it effectively. I mean, he can pass protect. He can obviously do all those things as a receiver. And I mean, the Saints were really just a perfect fit for him. I mean, Sean Payton, you know, through the years has always had this dynamic running back, whether it was, you know, Reggie Bush or Pierre Thomas or Darren Sproles, and Kamara really combines, you know, the best features of all those guys. I mean, he doesn't have, you know, the best top end speed, but he's fast enough to break away. He's, I mean, people still think that he's just this, you know, receiving back, but he's 215 pounds. I mean, he can take these hard hits and power through. He really has a knack for, you know, avoiding tackles and setting up, you know, the next guy to miss after, you know, he makes the first one. So, you know, I think it's just a combination of a perfect fit with the Saints. Him being underutilized at Tennessee really allowed him to fall to the third round where the Saints took him. And, I mean, I think, you know, we're just seeing the start of what could be a historic career.
One thing I've always really admired, though, is even though you've got Kamara and he does this amazing stuff, it's still like they don't get the ball to everybody else. Ingram has had a really productive year. They spread the ball around so well. Do you think that's the best attribute of both Breeze and Sean Payton, the whole offense, is the way they utilize everybody?
Yeah, I think it has to be. I mean, a lot of it is, you know, Sean Payton's creativity, because, you know, one of the things, like we were talking about earlier, you know, that has allowed him to have this sort of rejuvenation in the past 2 years is that, you know, he's sort of, you know, changed the offense a little bit. I mean, he still has his, you know, constant personnel moves, but, I mean, they just do a lot of different stuff than they were doing 10 years ago. And I think, you know, you talk to Drew Brees about it. I mean, their playbook, you know, when guys arrive, it's, like, so thick, you know, that's daunting for a lot of these young guys. And, you know, we see that with some guys who struggle right away as rookies, and that's another credit to Kamara. You know, Sean Payton was talking about him his rookie year, comparing his intelligence to Marshall Faulk. But certainly I think, you know, I'm actually reading a story right now on The Ringer about Drew Brees has this touchdown club of guys that only caught one touchdown. I think that just speaks to the idea that, you know, this is a very unselfish team. You know, obviously Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara are the big stars, but everyone has to play their role in order for this offense to move like it does. And I think that's been the case, you know, really for, you know, Sean Payton and Drew Brees' entire tenure here, but certainly this season.
What did you learn from the first matchup? What do you think will be the biggest change in how the Saints approach the Rams, having played them once before now?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway had to be that Marcus Peters can't check Michael Thomas one-on-one. I mean, for whatever reason, the Rams, you know, decided to have those two go toe-to-toe, and Thomas, you know, just whooped him. I'm blanking. I think it was like 190 yards or something. I'm blanking on it right now, but he had the 71-yard touchdown catch that sealed the game for the Saints. And I think, you know, coming into this game, the Rams are definitely going to have a different approach. Since Aqib Talib came back in the last third of the season, they've been running a lot more zone, and I would expect that to be the case. But at the same time, I mean, they could just double Mike Thomas because the other Saints receivers, you know, are so inconsistent. I mean, Ted Ginn is capable, but, you know, his numbers are vary from week to week. Traquan Smith, the rookie, you know, has been inconsistent too. The guy who really has stepped up in recent weeks is another undrafted rookie, Keith Kirkwood, but he's probably not going to play on Sunday. So I think how the Rams defend Michael Thomas is definitely going to be the key to success for them. I think the other thing is that the Saints did a really good job limiting Aaron Donald in that game, but that's going to be a lot tougher this week because Andres Pete, their left guard, you know, had hand surgery a few weeks ago, and he struggled against Fletcher Cox last week. So if he's not 100%, Donald, you know, could really ruin this game.
How do you see this playing out? Let's wrap it up with that. How do you see – did the Saints get it done at home?
Yeah, I think they do. I think it's going to be tight, and I don't think it's going to be the same, you know, 80-point total that we saw in the first matchup. I think both teams are going to try really hard to establish the run. But I just think, you know, the Saints – you know, if everything's even on the field, I think the Superdome should give the Saints just enough juice to pull it out.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We've talked to players and coaches – that have been in that environment, and they all say the same thing. Like, that is, when that place gets going, it is very, very loud. So you kind of think maybe that could also help the Saints, especially down the stretch.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the case last week. It was odd when, you know, the Eagles jumped out to that 14-point lead. The Superdome was pretty silent. But as soon as the Saints started to put things together on offense and defense, it was the loudest I've ever heard it last week. I'm sure, you know, if all the fans, you know, took some lozenges this week, they'll have their voices ready to make it even louder on Sunday.
Hey, thanks for doing this. Enjoyed the visit. Enjoy the game on Sunday.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right. That is Josh Katzenstein, Saints reporter for the Times-Picayune, and NOLA.com. Back to wrap up the second hour of Darren and Donick next. You just made the list coming up in the third hour. Inside jokes are fun.
Love inside jokes. Love to be a part of one someday.
We were having fun during the break. Got some really cool prizes, by the way, for You Just Made the List and Pick Six. I was looking over the Nashville Sports Council sending out blast about, you know, the NFL draft is coming here, the end of April. Tell you what, April could be a really, really fun month here in Nashville, right? NFL draft, NCAA Final Four, well, it's not going to be here. That'll be going on. The Masters, the Predators wrapping up their regular season, starting the playoffs. It's going to be a lot going on. Did I miss something? What else? Here's something we haven't talked about. You know what? I hate that we didn't get to it. And we got, by the way, we got really good feedback. I did. I don't know about you, about our appearance with Tony Kemp in studio. Seemed to a lot of people really enjoy that. He makes it really easy.
He does. That was fun.
But something we didn't touch on with him, and something we haven't brought up on the show, it's just been kind of lost in the shuffle of all the other stuff we've been getting to, is how about this story coming out of this guy who wants to bring Major League Baseball to Nashville?
I know. Well, and this is why it got my attention, because I've said the same thing for a couple of years now, because I've gone from being the guy that says, yeah, right, Major League Baseball, no, we're just not ready. I've been the guy saying we're not ready. We have two teams. We've got to make sure we're all over these two teams, and these two teams are flourishing, meaning the Titans and the Predators at the Major League level. Soccer has now become a third. But in the last couple of years, I have thought, you know, the way we're growing, if it were done right, I think in another 10 years, it could happen. It could happen. But I said, what's missing is you don't have somebody carrying the torch of, I'm going to bring baseball to Nashville.
Well, that's evidently what's been John Lohr is the torch.
That is.
This was in the Nashville
intriguing.
Business Journal.
And that's why I paid attention. And when I read the article, this guy is not from Nashville, but he is smart enough to meet the right people.
He has friends in high places.
Well, he's got friends in high places, which is always a big part of it, right? You have to have a team of people who can invest some money, but you also have to know the right people in the city. And so I noticed that one of the guys, just for example, in the article that he's talked to a lot, is Rich Riebling, who was a longtime member, you know, in the Nashville metro government, knows everybody. You know, he'd be a great guy to connect with and help you get connected with the right people. So and I like too that he's not saying, I'm going to bring it here in the next 2 years. Yeah. Like, I think he knows this
that
is a
smart.
Long range thing. And when you bounce it off people, there's always a lot of questions. Where would you do a park? You know, what about a transit system? You know, because the city itself has to continue to grow the right way to be able to do this right. Because even as Nashville grows, it still would be one of the smaller markets in Major League Baseball. But the hard part, a lot of times, is getting Major League Baseball to say that your city could handle one. There hasn't been a single person here clamoring for Major League Baseball, bring it here, and yet still, everybody puts Nashville on the list, right? Jason Stark had it on his list. The commissioner put Nashville on a list. It was almost like sending a signal. Hey, if you guys ever get your act together, we'd be interested. So a lot of times, that's the hard part. So
Rich,
the other thing I like
Riebling that you brought up, he was the finance director under Mayor Carl Dean.
Right.
And the COO under Megan Berry and Briley.
Right.
Like you said, I mean, he's
understands,
got a lot of pull
understands
in
the
metro government.
Yeah,
yes.
Understands how things work. Mm-hmm. And the other part that I think is the right approach is he has basically said, you know, we're not going to go to the city and say, build us a ballpark, he knows it would be a lot of private investment, which is how it would have to be done. So they're looking around at, you know, where would you build a stadium and what would need to get done? How much would it cost? And so, hey, it's intriguing.
I read it. My mind is not changed. By the way, we had several people call in. Josh, I was like, did I say we're giving something away? Or, I mean, were that many people wanted to talk about it? The phone started blowing up. And thank you, callers. Music City Marathon is also. It's the same weekend of as the NFL
draft. Oh, by
the way,
draft. That's like 20,000 people.
No, 30.
Yeah, 30,000. Yeah.
Yeah, that's 30,000 runners.
Everybody come on down.
So I didn't want to leave that out. Yeah, that's kind of a big deal. That's been a big deal in our city for a long, long time. Both of us have emceed that.
You guys ever run in it?
I have. I have.
Yeah, Willie did.
Really?
Willie did
once. Full 26?
Full 26 in 2002.
He pulled a Drew Bennett.
I've done the half twice. I've done the half twice.
You got the stickers on your car?
Stickers or you didn't do it? I got the sweatshirt. I got the medals that they give you.
I'm proud of you.
Participation trophies. I actually did train pretty hard for the marathon, and then I got hurt. And that I was not at my best on that day. I did not get the time that I wanted to. I'm still kind of stinging about that. But
what did you run?
I ran 4.5. I wanted to get 4. I ran like 4:30, 4:27, I think.
That's pretty good.
It was all right. I could have done better.
That was 17 years ago. If you notice, he hasn't tried to do better. That was a one and done. One and done-er.
Two halves since then. Now, yeah. The half, I could still go out there and get it done, I think. I could make it. Getting older, though.
Yeah. No interest. Zero. If I didn't have any interest before, I certainly don't have any interest now. Like I said, I'll MC it, but not run it. Standing up there on the scaffolding, it's impressive. It takes about 45 minutes for everybody to run past you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the elite runners up front.
Well, they've got it down now. Now it's on.
And that
them.
Was many, 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 many but years that ago. Event, right? That was a different.
They've done such a
different
great job
setup.
With that event. It just runs itself now. It's amazing. Everybody.
It's autopilot.
They keep bringing people back. People want to come back. They love coming to the city. It's going to be great again.
But my mind hasn't on changed baseball. On this. It hasn't. I read the article. I gave it. It's just due. I just haven't. I'm going to continue to say, for me, I'm going to worry about the things that are in place now, right? So I feel like we've taken the next step in MLS. Yeah. When we've talked about this, it's like, now wait a minute. Let's get this MLS stadium figured out. Let's actually break ground and have that thing happen. There's going to be an MLS team. By the way, it was great having Michael Reed on pregame last night. He was in the house. Big fan of the Predators, had his Roman Josi jersey on. Huge fan of the Preds. Captain of Nashville SC. Of course, we had the announcement yesterday. We're going to carry their games again this year on 94.9 Game 2. It was Michael Reed's a really cool dude to hang around with. So let's take care of that. And then, of course, the big one. I mean, something we've harped on a ton on this show. Titans need a new stadium. They do. Period. I don't care what they say. They need a new stadium. And they need one that has a retractable roof or a roof, period. And so we can get all the big events, and we can no longer have people say, is it supposed to rain? Is it going to be cold? Is that December game going to be cold? I'm not sure. So you don't have any excuses. No more excuses.
But also, you need it
so
for that. You
build
need-
that new stadium, and then we get all that other stuff taken care of. Then let's focus on maybe having that discussion. But for me, as much as I love baseball, it is just back burner topic for me, and it hasn't changed.
This is how my mind works, though. First of all, the Titans need to get on board here and get into the mindset of someday they are going to need a new stadium. Even if today they like to say, we don't need a new stadium. We've never asked for a new stadium. We don't want a new stadium.
Everything's fine here.
They need to. We're not talking about next year. I'm talking about in the long range, someday you're going to need a new stadium. It would improve the franchise.
Sooner rather than later.
Well, you need to start planning it.
No, I don't want to say just someday, because I'm not talking about 20 years from now. I'm talking way before then.
It should be more than 20, but it's not in the next two. But think about the synergy that potentially you could have. If you really had this baseball guy, and maybe he's got some interesting investors, and he's thinking outside the box, and you could get the Titans, who do not think outside the box. That's the problem. But if you did have somebody over there that could be a little creative, and you get some city leaders together, and you start thinking real big, get some architects together, do a little study. What would it take to do the full throttle shebang? A state-of-the-art, something never been done before, a multi-use stadium that would work for baseball and football and had a retractable roof that would keep the Super Bowl as an option or the Final Four as an option. And you start talking about who would pitch in what. You know, obviously the city can't just write the check for the whole thing, but if you had two ownership groups coming in there, I don't know. You could get some pretty good ideas going.
Is that what you want for a baseball stadium, though? Isn't that kind of
Not having that unique baseball stadium? Never anything that has been done before. But I'm talking about something that's never been done before. I agree with you. There's never been a multi-purpose baseball football stadium where you're like, man, what an awesome place, man. It's awesome.
It's just the opposite. I've been to enough of them. It's like crap.
They didn't work right.
No.
They didn't work right. And they're extinct for the most part now, other than
Oakland. I guess Oakland.
Oakland is the last one.
And that's about to evaporate.
Well, it would have already been evaporated if they...
Have they broken ground in Vegas?
No.
Who knows where that is?
Oh, you're talking... Okay, well, the Raiders. Yeah, I guess the Raiders are going.
But I'm saying the A's
would be long gone if they could get all the political stuff taken care of there, and they can't. They're stuck there.
Well, but it seems like they're, I think, getting a little bit closer to a new stadium, I think.
But in this, technology has changed since 1970, where most of those multi-purpose stadiums were built, right? Riverfront Stadium, Veterans Stadium, Three Rivers Stadium, Shea Stadium. They were all like late 60s, early 70s. Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, RFK Stadium. They were all built at the same time. Technology is different now. So if you really sat down and say, okay, could you do it? If you move stuff around, you know, you had the bleachers move this way, shaped that way. I wonder, why not? I mean, they still take the Northwestern Illinois football game and play at Wrigley Field.
Well, let me ask you
something. They have a bowl game at Yankee Stadium.
Why, if you're Houston, if you're going to play in a retractable roof baseball stadium, why wouldn't you just have figured that out back then rather than creating this monstrosity way out in Houston where the Texans play and you have the Astros right downtown with a retractable roof stadium? Why, I wonder why they couldn't figure out a way for what you're saying to make that work, because they both ended up getting new places kind of around the same time.
Right, but that was 20 years ago. I'm just saying the technology maybe advanced to where it's worth studying. In a perfect world, we build two new stadiums, but we know what that's going to cost. I mean, I don't think anybody has $3 billion sitting around, right, to build a new football stadium, the type that you're talking about. Right? You're talking about an Atlanta, Dallas kind of thing that could do it all. It's going to cost a couple bill, right?
And if you are
anybody
out there, and
then you're going to go build a baseball stadium, that's a whole other structure. I'm just saying, could you take the location, which is perfect, right downtown where the current football stadium is, and do something multi-purpose? That would be incredible.
And if you're listening to this show and you have $3 billion just laying around, can I borrow some money?
But you have the Titans saying,
Josh, you need
we don't
money?
Need a new stadium. We don't want to talk about a new stadium.
Josh would like some. You want any money?
Sure.
If you got $3 billion just laying around.
Yeah, but that's what it's going to cost, a lot of money, even to do one new stadium. But if you have a lot of private investors partnered up with the city, that's how you could get it done.
I like this idea a lot. We're Nashville. We're cool. Like, we do fun stuff. There's no reason that this could not be done in 2019 or even 2020 or 21 when it's time to build a new stadium. Let's do it.
I think it's going to be past 2021.
Yeah.
Even better.
2025.
Well, that's my point, is if you start working on it now, then you can start visualizing when you could do it. Right now, we're square one. Mm-hmm. Haven't started.
Come back, hour number three. You just made the list to kick off that hour. That's next.